This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the March 22nd, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We have today David Melton. First time with us, but no shrinking violet. David is a public affairs specialist, Social Security Administration, to answer frequently asked questions he gets. And I am sure this would cover more than a few hours, maybe a few days. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Bob. It's a pleasure to be with everyone today. I appreciate this opportunity.
All righty. So I guess we'll start off with somewhat the basics and then work it up to the hard. And as we go along, we occasionally get email questions. But that I'll sometimes play the person listening to what you've got to say for one reason. I don't know anything about Social Security relative to what you know, so I'm going to ask questions as well. So why don't we start off, I guess, with maybe one of the basics. Are Social Security offices open during the pandemic and the like?
That's a great question, Bob, and I want everyone to know that the Social Security Administration is open for business. Now, on March 17th of 2020, a little more than 1 year ago, we did close our doors at the local field offices for most in-person interviews to protect you, the American public, and also our employees. But we have not closed. And I think that's a key message that I want everyone to understand today is that we are open for business. So the question is, how do you conduct business at Social Security during times of COVID-19? Well, as most people are aware, we have a website, socialsecurity.gov, and there is a large variety of services and information, and we'll talk about that today. But there are a large variety of services that are available online, such as filing your applications for retirement benefits, or if you're a Social Security beneficiary, perhaps effectuating a change to your record, a change in direct deposit, a change of address. So, we are also open by telephone. And one of the things that we've done over the past 12 months is we have made our local field office phone numbers very visible. If you go to our website, you can find our field office locator, type in your zip code, your local office information, address, and local telephone number will appear. And you may be interested to know, Bob, that here in the Washington metropolitan area, we have a complex of 14 offices located in Maryland, the District of Columbia, Northern Virginia, extending westward out even into the eastern panhandle of West Virginia. But on an average business day, we are answering almost 900 phone calls per hour in those 14 offices. So we are here, ready to serve. Do not delay reaching out to Social Security. We are offering some limited dire need in-person interviews by appointment only. We will be happy to talk with you should those circumstances exist for a particular individual.
So when these folks call, do you find some just don't fully appreciate doing X, Y, or Z, or even maybe the benefit requirement, do they meet the benefit requirement? So, I mean, let's take it from the grassroots for somebody that just really doesn't know, and maybe we have some people listening that are anxious about maybe going to the office.
Yes, Bob, you know, there's a great deal of lack of information about Social Security, but we're very committed as an agency in helping people become better educated consumers of the Social Security programs, placing themselves in a position to where they can utilize those programs for themselves and family members as appropriate. If someone has a question about Social Security, I would encourage them to give us a call and ask that question. We are here to help. They may also want to look at our website if that is something that they are accustomed to doing. We have what are called frequently asked questions. So many of the questions that a person may have those answers are readily available at our website, or again, by placing that phone call. And don't be hesitant in doing so. We are here. The field offices are staffed from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday to answer those calls. We also have a national toll-free number. That number is 1-800-772-1213. The office hours, we pulled back just slightly since COVID onset last year, but representatives are available at that national toll-free number from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. So we're here. We're ready to serve. Reach out to us.
The few times I've called, I've been impressed with the person's been generally courteous, would answer the question without using words that I wouldn't understand. And this goes way back when I first started into the workforce. And then later on, sometimes clients were anxious about it, and we would call maybe while they were here. And I would imagine that being on that phone, I mean, is there a call center where this goes into regionally? Or I doubt it's national because it'd be too much. But maybe I'm wrong. There'd be just too much volume.
Well, our national toll-free number, that 1-800-772-1213 number, that is staffed on regional bases around the country, depending upon the time of day that someone places the call. Early in the morning, it would go to the East Coast, obviously. If you're calling, 6 p.m. at night, perhaps that call is being routed out to a regional call center in the western part of the country. So those are regionally based, but your local phone numbers, the local field office phone numbers, those are being answered by that local staff. And I think has been discussed previously on the programs. Last March, we dispersed our employees to work remotely, and they are connected to our local field office phone numbers from their remote locations. They're able to answer those calls locally. You're speaking to someone in the neighborhood, so to speak.
Okay, and that's very good for folks that just maybe don't have the comfort level to ask questions or whatnot. So, and then once they get acclimated, is each person, yeah, can they get something called a My Social Security account? What's that?
What's a My Social Security account? That's a wonderful question, and I want to spend just a minute talking about that. One of our goals this year is to have 50 million individuals create a My Social Security account. We see approximately 22,000 of these accounts being created each business day. So the question is, what is My Social Security? Well, it's an online portal. It's an online service that we created a few years ago now, but it allows people to gain access to not only their personal information, but also access to services. And so for those who may be listening who are not yet Social Security or Medicare beneficiaries, if you've not yet created a My Social Security account, I want to challenge you to do that and do that today. Go to our website, socialsecurity.gov. You will find My Social Security account information very prominently placed on our homepage, and create that new account. By doing so, there are a number of services that you will be able to access today, including obtaining your Social Security statement. You know, Bob, I'm sure a lot of our listeners remember the days when Social Security would mail out an annual Social Security statement about 3 months before your birth month. You could anticipate receiving this statement. And we pulled back on those paper statements a number of years ago as a cost-saving measure. But you, the American people, have told us this is a valuable financial planning tool, and we want to put that information into your hands. And what we provide on that statement is a year-by-year posting of your wages as they have been recorded at the Social Security Administration. the significance of that is your Social Security benefit is based upon that earnings history. And certainly you want to ensure the accuracy of that earnings history to ensure the accuracy of your Social Security benefit. But we also provide you with estimates of what your benefits may be in the future, not only retirement benefits, but we talk about current benefits that would be payable should you have the onset of a severe disabling impairment and no longer have the capacity to work. We provide information about the benefits that your family could receive should you pass away. And one of the things that we've done just recently, earlier this year in 2021, is we created a series of new messages that we share that are age appropriate. So what we're speaking, when we speak to a 60-year-old, the messages that we want to share with that individual are not the same messages that we want to share with a 30-year-old. And so we hope that these messages are timely and they're, important to your stage of life right now, and that they help you in planning. And it's all about planning, as you know. I mean, this is what you're all about. This is what this show is all about, is helping people become better positioned to plan their retirement. And so for so many people, federal employees or otherwise, you're working, you're paying Social Security taxes, you're gaining that coverage, and you want to know what these benefits are. What does this mean to me? What role does Social Security play in my overall financial picture? You know, I often tell people when I do presentations that I want them to take away three concrete, useful, actionable items of information that they can incorporate into their financial planning for themselves and their family members. But financial planners will tell you that you need to replace 80% of your earnings to maintain your lifestyle in retirement. And that's going to vary from family to family, person to person. Maybe you need more than 80 or less than 80% replacement of your earnings, but you'll hear that 80% rule used frequently. And for the average worker, Social Security is going to provide about half of that necessary income. About 40% of your earnings are replaced by the Social Security program for an average worker. And the obvious question is, what is average? And for this year in 2021, we're talking about someone who's earning approximately $80,000 per year. So those tools are available at that My Social Security website. You can also obtain replacement Social Security cards under certain circumstances, which is very important during these times of COVID-19. You might have otherwise gotten in the car and driven down to your local office. That may not be possible today. So these services are even more important. And for our listeners who are beneficiaries, they have the ability to effectuate changes, make changes into their Social Security records. As I mentioned, direct deposit, change of address. They can get letters verifying their Social Security benefit amount. So this is an ever-evolving umbrella of services, if you will. And really, everyone should have a My Social Security account.
Absolutely. Now, as you speak, my mind sometimes works a different way to protect from things not being proper. So if somebody got a call from what they said was Social Security, and the call says, "We're having trouble with your Social Security number. Could you please give it to me?" Do you get many of that? And then somebody's got the number.
Every day.
Wow.
I want people to know that this scam is taking place. It's a telephone scam. It predates COVID-19, but we've seen it grow worse during COVID-19. And what these callers are doing is they are purporting to be employees of the Social Security Administration. And then, as you point out, a common refrain that you will hear from them is there is an issue with your Social Security number. Perhaps it's been involved in some sort of criminal activity or other nefarious activity. But that caller can solve the problem immediately. And all you have to do is provide some personally identifiable information or perhaps send some money. And problem solved. And those are scams. And we want people to understand these are scams. and we want them to report those scams to our Office of the Inspector General. They can do so online, or they can call the Office of the Inspector General. That information is available, Bob, at our website. But here's the challenge, I think, with these scams, and why they're successful is because Social Security employees do make phone calls. We do have telephone communication with the American people each and every day. I mentioned just a moment ago here in the DC area, we're receiving 900 phone calls an hour here in the Washington metropolitan area. But we're also placing calls with legitimate business reasons to do so. And so my advice is, if you receive an unsolicited phone call from the Social Security Administration, then you want to make sure that you're confident that person really is an employee from Social Security. You want to be careful in providing personally identifiable information. And if you have any questions at all, hang up. You know, you can call us. You can call a local office, or you can call that national toll-free number that we mentioned, that 800-772-1213 number. And we can verify if someone works as an employee of the Social Security Administration. But one of the things that we'll never do, Bob, is we will never threaten you. We will never call and be demanding. We certainly will never tell you that you face imminent arrest. That's not how we arrest people. We don't give you advance warning. If that were to happen.
We don't
call and say, look out the window, the police are arriving. You know, that's not how it works. and we're not going to demand that you take immediate action. And so this is happening hundreds of times a day here in the DC area. I get calls almost every day from someone saying, David, I got this phone call and I think maybe that this is a scam. And they told me that my Social Security number has been involved with some drug activity in South Texas. What do you think? I said, you didn't provide any personally identifiable information, did you? And they go, no, I hung up. I said, that's the right course of action. So this is out here, and we want people to be aware of this, that these calls are, you know, happening. It's a real legitimate threat. People are losing money over this. And don't fall victim to this scam.
It's a lot of scams. I had a client call up not that long ago, and it was a she, and she was not young, but not old. And she said, what do you think? Somebody's going to come down from, and believe it or not, was from Social Security, and they're going to visit me, and I should have X, Y, and Z, which really had nothing to do with Social Security. And I said, could you give me his name and phone number? She mentioned it was a man. And that guy's name was, of course, Max Gamble. So I called Max up. And I said, I just want to be certain that we have everything that you need. And he goes, good. And I said, what do you need now? And he's da-da-da-da-da. I said, well, terrific. We're going to have some guests. We're going to have the FBI. We're going to have the state troopers and the like. And I think you ought to meet them. So I won't tell you what he told me to do, but she would.
Well, you know, and there's a couple of.
She would have done it though. That was the scary part.
Yes. Right. Yeah. You know, people are falling victim to this, and these scammers are smart. They're devious, and so a couple of nuances that we've seen recently is that they are actually using Social Security employees' names. It's not that hard to find us. If you want to find us, you can find us. And so they call up and say, hi, I'm David Melton from the Social Security Administration, and you have a problem with your number, and you need to wire me $100 immediately or face imminent arrest, you know, and off you do. But the other thing that we're seeing is, so with COVID-19 and electronic services and Zoom meetings and WebEx and all those sorts of things that we've all become so familiar with over the past year, what do you think they're doing? They're producing facsimiles of Social Security employee ID badges. You know, all federal employees have ID badges.
Right.
If you walk around the District of Columbia, you see everybody with an ID badge hanging around their neck, right?
Right.
So they're producing facsimiles of those. And so they're showing you that, you know, hold it up to the camera on their laptop and say, hi, I'm David Melton. See, here's my ID badge. So again, if you have any doubt whatsoever, you know, hang up that phone and you place the phone call to the Social Security Administration.
All right. Why don't we do
There's
this?
There's something going on with you.
We need to take a break.
Go ahead.
With the good folks that sponsored the show from WEPA. And everybody stay online and see what WEPA can do for them.
Life doesn't always go as planned. WEPA provides group term life insurance for over 46,000 civilian federal employees and has been insuring the future of feds for more than 75 years. With WEPA, you can find coverage that meets your changing needs and adjust whenever you're ready. Apply for your policy today by visiting waepa.org. waepa.org.
Life insurance on your terms. Group term life insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WEPA, feds can apply for up to $1.5 million in coverage regardless of salary. WEPA offers life insurance protection for feds by feds. Apply by visiting waepa.org today.
All righty, welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today with David Melton. David is public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration. He's got a great voice, great patter, and I'm taking notes as well. So we looked at several bullet points. A couple here. What is the Social Security retirement age? And a corollary to that is, when can I apply for Social Security?
Maybe, perhaps, Bob, the question is, when would you like your benefits to begin?
Okay.
How often we want to, yeah, right now, right? That's what people always say. When can I start? When do you want them to start? Today. But no, that's a great question. And I want everyone to know that you do have, in terms of retirement benefits, you have an 8-year span of time in which to sign up for Social Security, starting as early as age 62 or deferring until as late as age 70. But everything works off of the benefit that's payable to you at your full unreduced retirement age. That age is going to be somewhere between ages 65 and 67, depending upon the listener's year of birth. I suspect that for most of us that are tuned in today, our retirement ages range somewhere between ages 66 and 67. And that would be true for anyone who's born in 1943 or later. So that's a key question. I often have said when I do my presentations that filing for Social Security is perhaps the most important financial decision that you'll make in your lifetime. And when I say that, I want the listeners to understand that when they file for Social Security, they are making a financial decision. Generally, they're making a financial decision that they will live with for the remainder of their life. And they may also be making a financial decision that will carry over in terms of a survivor benefit, should they predecease their spouse. And there is no one right time to file for Social Security. I know that you've heard people say, I'm filing at age 62 as soon as possible. Whereas you may hear another individuals indicate that they're going to wait, perhaps wait out until as late as age 70. But I want people to look at those estimates that we provide on their Social Security statement. We share with you that 8-year span of time, giving you the low end of the scale, the high end of the scale, if you will, and the middle of the scale, that full retirement age amount. We also have some new tools available under that My Social Security umbrella that we discussed, where people can pinpoint an effective month of eligibility, narrow that down a bit more closely to a specific month, a specific age. Hey, I want to file for Social Security at age 62 and 7 months, or I want to file for Social Security at age 64 and 3 months. What would my benefit be is the question I hear. And these answers we're making easier and easier to obtain using some of those services under that My Social Security portal. But I hope that everyone understands that they have options. That's something that I hear that makes me stop for just a moment when someone comes up to me and says after a presentation, I never realized that I had options. Well, we all have options as it pertains to Social Security and most every other thing in life too. But the question is, what are my options? And you want to understand those options and work with us, use the resources that we're making available so that you understand those options and make good informed decisions.
All right, I'm going to ask the question, how much Social Security will I get? And this is a general question. And then let's hook into it two other things that we talked about that you would like to cover. What is the average Social Security retirement benefit? And what is the maximum? So, and you know, you can give us a number for the maximum, but I think it also should be prefaced by this is what you have to do to get the maximum. So let's try to bundle all three of those, and we might be talking until next Monday, but let's give it a shot.
Well, that's all right too. I've got the time. So how much will I get?
Yeah.
There's two concepts that come into play with the Social Security Administration and the computation of our benefits. One is a concept called individual equity. What does that mean? Well, that means that your Social Security benefit is directly related to your lifetime earnings. The higher your lifetime earnings, the larger your Social Security benefit. And in computing a retirement benefit, Social Security will use that worker's highest 35 years of work. You know, philosophically, Bob, Social Security is a social insurance program. It's designed to replace, in part, earnings that have been lost when one of three life-changing events occur: retirement, death, and the onset of a disability. But in terms of a retirement benefit, we are replacing your lifetime earnings, lifetime defined as your highest 35 years of work. So when someone submits that retirement application to us, we're going to obtain their year-by-year posting of wages, that same information you see reflected on the Social Security statement. We're going to use those earnings that the wage earner has created to compute the benefit, compute that full unreduced amount payable at their full unreduced retirement age. And then that worker will make a choice as to when they wish to become entitled. Do I want to start early and receive less money? The earlier I start, the greater the reduction. Or do I want to defer beyond that full retirement age and increase that benefit through what are called delayed retirement credits, monthly increases in that benefit amount that continue to accrue until age 70? And so I want our listeners to understand that there are two factors that influence the answer to your question, how much will I get? First and foremost is that earnings history. That will determine your full unreduced benefit amount. And then the second factor is, when do you access that? Do you take it early and receive less? Do you take it later and receive more? And so I want our listeners to answer a question. And they can do this at their leisure. It's not something that I expect you to answer right now. But the question that I pose is, how important is Social Security to me? And what role does it play in my overall financial security and retirement? And as you look at that question and answer that question, I think that helps frame what your options are, what your choices are, and what course of action that an individual would want to take. And there's various things that influence a retirement decision other than how much will I receive from Social Security. And so we have a great publication. It's called Thinking About Retirement. And it talks about some of the things we want you to consider, such as your health, such as your longevity, such as your personal needs, and understanding that all of that will fold in together, if you will, to that ultimate decision as today's the day for me to file for Social Security.
That's a lot of moving parts. But it's good to know that there are a lot of moving parts. So when you apply or when you read about it, you understand that it's just not one number that's generated by one event. And the you know, the longer you work, the more you're going to get. And somebody said, well, you know, you can push that out till forever. Well, there's a psychology here too, but there's a synergy, if you will, between benefits. Social Security, clearly, you're in control of what that may be or what that might not be. Years in service, highest compensation, the annuity. The thrift, of course, is another story. The longer you work, the more you can put in, I won't say the risk you take, but it all can't go to the G fund. So this is the top three when somebody looks at retiring. They all really have to, I would say, come into play. And sometimes people call and they say, I don't want to work another 2 years. And I go, well, if you don't work another 2 years, this is what you'd be giving up for life. Not trying to persuade them to stay on longer, but like you've been telling everybody, it's very clear. This is your benefit. This is how to enhance it. And if you choose not to put in the, you know, time for that, then the benefit may not be to your liking. Maybe they go off to a second career. I don't know, but let me ask you this. You've got a lot of boots on the ground. What would you say is a common misconception when working with people looking at starting Social Security? They might have the idea that, no, you know, now it's plenty and, you know, another couple of years won't mean that much. How do you approach the answer to that? You can't do financial planning for them, but you can explain how Social Security fits into the mix.
That's right, Bob. And I think a good question that people would ask themselves is, how important is Social Security to me? Maybe not is age 62 necessarily, but what about age 72, 82, 92, 102? One of the very fun projects that I've had the pleasure of being a small part of in my career at Social Security is something that we call the Centenarian Project. And when our beneficiaries attaining age 100, we make contact with them. And there's a couple of reasons why we do so. Obviously, there's been some program changes over their lifetime, and we want to ensure that everyone is receiving all that they are due. But when I would make contact with our centenarians, I would always look at what age did they start receiving Social Security? And we didn't have that conversation, but I would look at that with the context of, did they make a good decision or maybe not quite as good a decision, just from that very strict, I've got my blinders on, how much will I receive from Social Security over my lifetime perspective? And one of the questions, though, that I have asked our centenarians almost universally is, when you retired, did you do so with a plan to be retired for 40 years? And you know, I've yet to have an individual answer yes to that question. But some of us are going to live to be centenarians. I suspect some of our listeners today, perhaps, will be future Social Security centenarians. And so that really is, I think, something that's important for people to ponder and to ask themselves and to consider is, how does my financial picture change as I age in my retirement years? Social Security statistics show that a person becomes more reliant upon Social Security. That benefit is not going to go away. In fact, it's probably going to increase through cost of living adjustments, where other sources of income that we've set aside for retirement may not be inflation protected. They may not be renewable. You know, go spend that that money in the bank and it's gone, you know, unless you replace it. And so I think asking ourselves those questions helps prompt the conversation that we need to have with ourselves and perhaps with our family members as to, how do I want to utilize the Social Security program? And I hope that our listeners get a sense that, as you point out, Bob, they really do have options and they have choices. As you said, there are moving parts.
All righty. So now let's take a short break here and then I'll come back and I'm going to ask you this. What's the average Social Security retirement benefit? What's the maximum? So to give people a range, and you know, what an individual gets is going to be somewhere between those two numbers. Anyway, let's take a short break and let the good folks that are listening know what NITP can do for them.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Well, welcome back to the live portion of the show. We have David Melton today. He's a public affairs specialist with Social Security. He speaks with power and clarity in a subject that for many of us, me included, needs clarity. I just need to understand the moving parts, and I don't think I'm different than anybody else. I sometimes help people understand, never tell them what to do, but understand the dynamics of, you know, how, what, another year or two. So we'll talk about average Social Security retirement benefits and what's the maximum. And I guess the big question is how do I know how much I'm going to get? Is that an easy number to come at? As we speak today, we might be 10 years away from retirement or 15.
That's right, Bob. I'm going to share some resources that people can use to get those numbers for themselves. But let's talk about those benefit amounts. I get that question all the time. What's the maximum Social Security benefit? And I tell people in responding to your question, I have to give a bit of a caveat to that question. And that caveat is I want you to understand the context that I'm going to answer and provide this number. So if we were looking at an individual who's attaining their full retirement age this calendar year in 2021, and that individual for the past 35 years, remember we're using your highest 35 years of earnings in that retirement computation, but for the past 35 years, that worker has earned the maximum Social Security, the wages that are subject to the Social Security tax. If that's the individual that we're talking about, that individual in 2021 would receive a benefit amount of $3,148 per month. Now, as we've talked about previously this morning, what do I do with that full unreduced amount? If I defer it, I can increase that amount through those delayed retirement credits, an annual increase of 8%, growing to age 70. So my $3,148 can be more. I've laughed in answering this question before audiences. When I give out a number, invariably the hand rises and the individual says, I know someone who receives more than that. You're incorrect, David. So I want to just be careful when we talk about maximum Social Security benefits. I think when people ask that question, I understand, you know, the point that they're trying to make. But I don't want anyone to go away today saying, I heard on the program that the maximum amount of money that someone can receive from Social Security is $3,148 per month. But in that context, that would be the number that we share this year in 2021. But what's the average? The average is almost half of that, or $1,543 per month. For all retired workers in this country this year, the average benefit is $1,543. For couples where they're both receiving benefits, perhaps independently as the workers themselves, or perhaps we have a spouse receiving benefits as that spouse, but for couples, the average benefit is just under $2,600 a month. So what does our callers do with that information? As you point out, There's tools that are available at our website that allow you to look at that. I'm going to name three of them. You have the Social Security statement, providing you with estimates of retirement benefits under the assumption that you continue working at your current salary out to those various retirement ages. But what if I don't do that, David? My full retirement age is 67. That's true for anyone born 1960 or later. I don't plan to work until I'm age 67. I'm going to retire at age 58, for example. And I've positioned myself to where I do not have to work. What impact will that retirement decision at age 58 have on my future Social Security? You're removing years of earnings that will not be available for that computation. So we have an online retirement estimator. It links to your earnings history. So we use what you've created to date, but you predict the future by answering two questions. What are my annual earnings? And at what age would those earnings cease? And we'll come back with an immediate estimate of what your benefit amounts would be. And you could compare that to the numbers that we provided on the statement where we projected out future wages. And you can see that dollar impact. And I don't want to overstate that, but I think that everyone will agree that if I increase my pool of lifetime earnings, I'm increasing my Social Security benefit. If I decrease that pool of lifetime earnings, I'm decreasing that benefit amount. And then the third tool that I want them to use is some of the retirement planning tools that we've made available where you can look at specific eligibility ages. As I mentioned earlier, 63 and 8 months, 64 and 3 months, for example. So there's some really good tools available at our website. And if all else fails, pick up the phone and give us a call. We'll be glad to help and we'll be glad to talk.
What's that phone number again?
The national toll-free number is 1-800-772-1213. Representatives standing by 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Yeah, I've called it more than a few times, and I try to hit it right at 8, because I know if I wait an hour or two, I might be on the phone a long time. No disrespect to Social Security, clearly, but there is a demand for knowledge, and this is the place to get it. So I don't think I'd wait till the end of the day. If I have to, I have to. But if I catch it right early on, I get somebody that's fresh, et cetera. And you know, the times that I've used it with friends or clients, it has been surprisingly to the point. Not surprisingly because I had any preconceived ideas, but with that kind of volume and those variables, it's kind of hard to be that precise. Anyway,
that's so, right. And don't forget field office locator and that local phone number that may be beneficial to you, our listeners also.
Yeah, that the other thing there, too, is I think is best to go often and go early. No disrespect, but, you know, at noon or so, everybody's pretty much there. And it's a very popular thing to do because there's a knowledge base and we feel sometimes more comfortable talking to somebody than we do with a computer. But probably less and less of that in recent years. We're comfortable with what comes through on a computer. So, David,
we're committed to serving people however, whichever method works. And I think the bottom line is we want people to get armed with information so they can make good decisions. And whether that's utilizing our online services or making that phone call or coming to visit us when we do reopen, we want to ensure that you have sufficient information to make that good informed choice.
You know, we focused on the individual, not entirely, but, you know, predominantly. But can family members receive an individual's Social Security while they're alive or when they pass? How does that work?
Well, yes, they can, Bob. And, you know, March is Women's History Month. And I think there's a couple of things that we've tried to highlight this month, including the role of women in the history and the creation and evolution of the Social Security program. Our blog just recently focused on Frances Perkins, who was Secretary of Labor during the Roosevelt administration. very much an advocate of the Social Security programs and an integral part of the group of individuals that created the program and brought it to fruition. But I share, when you talk about family, that when the Social Security program first began in 1935, it was a worker-only program. It was the 39 amendments to the Social Security Act that changed the nature of the program, created family benefits, benefits for spouses, husbands, and wives, payable as early as age 62. Those have evolved over the years, but those benefits exist today. We also pay benefits to spouses that are surviving spouses, widows and widowers. Those are payable as early as age 60 or age 50 if the surviving spouse is disabled themselves. And then we pay benefits to children. And, you know, when I first came to work for the Social Security Administration, it seems to me that my recollection is such that it was rather infrequent that I would take a retirement claim and the worker had young children. But that has changed, and that's significant for people to know. We pay unmarried minor children. Those benefits stop at age 18. We have a student benefit that we pay between ages 18 and 19 if that child is still a high school student. But we also have a benefit that we pay off for the work record of a parent to a child who is unmarried, where the child became disabled before he or she attained age 22. And the significance of that is that families who have children with disabilities, particularly more severe impairments, we may be part of your child's future when you, mom or dad, decide today's the day for me to file for Social Security to begin my retirement benefits. When I was growing up, I had a friend of mine who broke his neck in a diving accident at age 14. And Charles became a quadriplegic at the age of 14. He did not file for Social Security. He had never worked, and there was no earnings history upon which to file. His parents were mid-career age at the point of his diving accident. But 22 years later, Charles is now 36 years of age. His father is retiring, becoming eligible for Social Security at age 62. And Charles, at the age of 36, became eligible as the disabled child of that retired parent. And so Social Security does provide those family benefits. There is a benefit eligibility screening tool, or BEST, at our website, where someone can answer questions without providing that personally identifiable information, but answer questions about their life experiences. Have you been married? Are you divorced? Have you ever worked? Are you disabled? Are you widowed, widower? Do you have children? All those sorts of questions. And we come back and we talk about the benefits to which there appears to be eligibility, either now or in the future. So again, that's another great tool that we have at our website for people to begin to understand what's available to them. I get that question all the time. I don't know where to start, David. I listen to you and I hear all of this information, but I do not know where to start. Help me. And I would refer you to that benefit eligibility screening tool and creating that My Social Security account as those starting points.
So, I mean, I'm not going to tell you it's easy, because some people aren't proficient in doing that, but it's not hard, so that you couldn't in a try or two get to where you want to be. But let's say somebody just, you know, they freeze, and is there like a help button you can press?
Yeah, help, right? Yeah, there's some tools. We even have something that's called click to chat. Imagine that. And so, you know, yes, we are committed to communicating with the American public, and we have various avenues to do so. But yes, Bob, we even have a click to chat. And so, you know, as I always tell people, if you utilize online services, that's great. That's a service channel. It's not the only channel. And so, you know, if that works for you, great. You're going to find that there's a tremendous amount of information available to you online. But if that doesn't work for you, pick up the phone, call us. Call that national number, call your local field office number. We're here to help you.
So you have a protege, Lester Austin, and Lester's got a great line. He says, with regards to going online. So you click on it, stick on it, and stroll. So he was making it like not a shopping trip, but, you know, then somebody go, yeah, I can do it. Just like you. Here's what you do. And I think people might be a little bit intimidated by answering questions, but what should somebody have in front of them should they call? I mean, is it, besides their social security card, should they do any kind of homework? Not laborious that it, you know, got to spend, you know, 2 hours trying to ask all the questions you can, but, you know, with the boots on the ground that you've had, and if you had to look at it for somebody and explain to them, this is what you really need to bring to the table at a minimum, what would that be?
Well, Bob, as you point out, my friend Lester used to have that saying of click on it, stick on it, and scroll through it. And that's a great way to approach Social Security. But I would just tell someone, come armed with your questions, whatever they may be. You know that old phrase, I have a stupid question, and the response is always, there are no stupid questions. That is so true. That is so true. Just come with your questions. You're not going to ask us something that we haven't been asked before, but we're here to help you get answers to your questions. So come with those questions. Now, as far as some information that you might want to have readily available off of the top of your head or at your fingertips, perhaps, would be some dates. If you're asking about benefits for spouses, divorced spouses, and we begin asking you about marriage and divorce dates and those sorts of things, that would be helpful. Information about your work activity, particularly if you're asking us to provide you with estimates of future benefits. We may ask you some questions about, well, when do you plan to stop work? And if you come back and you tell us, well, I'm not sure, well, then that muddles the response that I can give to you. So those sorts of things. But first and foremost, I would say what you want to have before you are your questions.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.